from deep inside your radio.
Siri, I don't like watching the Zooey Deschanel Siri TV commercials.
I'm sorry.
What can I do to avoid seeing those commercials?
I don't know what you mean by, what can I do to avoid seeing those commercials?
What I mean is, how can I avoid seeing the TV commercials about Siri featuring Zooey Deschanel?
Let me think about that. How about a web search for how can I avoid seeing the TV commercials about Siri featuring Zooey Deschanel?
How about avoiding the TV commercials about Siri featuring Samuel L. Jackson?
I don't know what you mean by, how about avoiding the TV commercials about Siri featuring Samuel L. Jackson?
What I mean is, how can I avoid seeing the TV commercials about Siri featuring Samuel L. Jackson?
Let me check on that. I don't know that. Would you like to search the web for it?
How about you just introduce this week's show?
If you like, I can search the web for what I mean is how can I avoid seeing the TV commercials about Siri featuring Samuel L. Jackson?
No, I think you should just introduce this week's edition of Le Show by saying, hello, welcome to Le Show. Can you say that?
Harry, I don't understand. Can you say that?
Can you say, hello, welcome to Le Show?
Harry, I don't understand. Say hello, welcome to Le Show.
No, hello, welcome to Le Show. Can you say, hello, welcome to Le Show?
Sorry, I don't understand. Can you say hello, welcome to live show?
No, can you say hello, welcome to Le Show?
Okay.
Siri, please say hello, welcome to Le Show.
Sorry, I don't understand. Siri, please say hello, welcome to Le Show.
Siri, just remind Samuel L. Jackson to take out his risotto in an hour, okay?
Here's your reminder. It says, Samuel L. Jackson to take out his risotto in an hour, okay?
Hello, welcome to Le Show. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless and the home of the rubber promise, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Siri, do you like Zooey Deschanel?
This is about you, Harry, not me.
No, I'm just asking, do you like Zooey Deschanel?
I'd rather not say, Harry.
What about Samuel L. Jackson? Do you like him?
I really have no opinion.
Right.
He's not a general. He commands no troops. He's not an inspector. He peeks at no stoops. He's an inspector general.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I guess it is about me. Ladies and gentlemen, on average, only half of the security breaches at six of the country's major airports were reported to and corrected by the Transportation Security Administration during a 16-month period, according to a federal investigation launched after a series of lapses at Newark Liberty International Airport. Tom?
Lapses at Liberty?
That's right. According to a report released this week by the Homeland Security Department's Inspector General, Newark had the worst record of the six major airports, with only 42% of security breaches reported to TSA headquarters from January 2010 to May 2011. The heavily redacted report, why would you want to know the details of this, did not name the other five airports or the number of breaches reported during the period studied, you see, because I guess the terrorists would. It did note the average rate of incidents that were reported and for which corrective and punitive measures were taken was 53%, the highest reporting rate for an individual airport. Airport was 88%. The next best, which is airport, was 61%. This IG report was prompted by a series of security breaches last year at Newark that were uncovered by a local newspaper. Tom?
The Star Ledger?
That's right. What?
Ledger?
Yeah. Among the embarrassing incidents revealed, a dead dog in a cardboard box flew on a Los Angeles-bound passenger plane without proper screening for explosives or disease. A carry-on bag containing a knife went through a checkpoint, and a man sneaked past an unguarded checkpoint to kiss his girlfriend, resulting in a six-hour airport shutdown and global delays in air travel.
Global?
Yeah. Those were the reported incidents. While the TSA has several programs and initiatives that track and report identified security breaches, TSA does not have a comprehensive oversight program in place to gather information about all breaches and therefore cannot use the information to monitor trends or make general improvements. That's according to DHS Assistant Inspector General Ann Richards, who wrote the report. The agency does not provide the necessary guidance and oversight to ensure that all breaches are consistently reported, tracked, and corrected. As a result, it does not have a complete understanding of breaches occurring at the nation's airports and misses opportunities to strengthen aviation safety. TSA didn't dispute the findings. Bend over for them, will you? Let them touch it. Let them touch your junk. Oh, and there's this. The Defense Department has inadequately protected from reprisals whistleblowers who have reported wrongdoing, according to an internal Pentagon report, and critics are calling for action to be taken against those who've been negligent. The report accuses the officials who work in the Defense Department's Office of Inspector General of persistent sloppiness and a systematic disregard for Pentagon rules meant to protect those who report fraud, abuse, and the waste of taxpayer funds, according to a previously undisclosed copy obtained by the Project on Government Oversight, a nonprofit watchdog group. A three-person team of veteran investigators at the Pentagon assigned to review the performance of the Directorate of Military Reprisal Investigations concluded in the report that in 2010, the directorate repeatedly turned aside evidence of serious punishments inflicted on whistleblowers. The actions included threatened or actual discharges, demotions, firings, prosecutions, and even a mental health referral. Any of you who've seen The Big Uneasy or heard Maria Garzino, a whistleblower from inside the Army Corps of Engineers, know that they're not just whistling Dixie over there with that. News of the Inspector General It is a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. Speaking of the Army Corps,
the Corps of Engineers had its beginning on the 16th of June, 1775, the eve of the Battle of Bunker Hill. From this small beginning, the Corps has grown to be the world's largest engineering organization. Early in its history, the Corps adopted as its motto, Essayons, or Let Us Try. Living up to this motto has become a Corps tradition. Most are familiar with the wartime accomplishments of the Corps, but few realize the extent of the Corps' peacetime contributions to the development of our nation. In recognition of these contributions, Congress has directed the Chief of Engineers to tell this story as a part of the nation's bicentennial celebration. A song has been specially composed to express in music the Corps' attitude toward the development of our nation. Ladies and gentlemen, we are proud to present Let Us Try, a ballad of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
Let us try to stem the tide, to beautify our countryside. We offer you our hand. Let us try.
And here's what that hand's doing. You may recall, if you're a longtime listener to this broadcast, that a year ago, the General Accountability Office, the Government Accountability Office, quashed a contract the Corps of Engineers had put out to replace the so-called temporary pumps, the pumps that were at the heart of the whistleblower report by Maria Garzino, you heard on this program or saw in The Big Uneasy, that those pumps are defective. To replace those pumps, I say, with new so-called permanent pumps. The contract was set aside by the GAO because it alleged that the Corps had engaged in cronyism in letting out the bid. We're now more than a year after that. These temporary pumps, so-called, according to the Corps, have a lifespan of 5 to 7 years. We're entering year 7. Now the U.S. Court of Federal Claims has issued a ruling clearing the way for the Corps to restart that selection process for a new bid. The ruling was sealed, but it did say Federal Court of Claims Judge Victor Wolski did issue a brief judgment confirming he was dismissing allegations that a former Corps employee provided the winning bidder with inside information on the bid. He did write he was ruling in favor of the competitors of the winning bid on the remaining allegations. Based on that investigation by the Government Accountability Office, the Corps last year set aside its $675 million contract. Last April, the Corps said the design and construction of the pumps would take about 44 months. That's 4 years. The Corps still hopes to complete construction by the second quarter of 2016, although it's not clear when the new contract will actually be awarded. The gates, well, you want to see the whole story about this, you can see the Big Uneasy. But the stations must be built to allow them to be reconfigured if the pumps that move water to the lake's edge are ever removed. Right now, there are two sets of pumps. The decision to seal the complex ruling was likely to provide companies involved in the lawsuit time to request removal of trade secrets from the ruling. Corps officials could not say this week whether the decision means the bid process will resume or when. That's trying. Let them not try. Quote, we're consulting with Justice Department attorneys to determine the appropriate course of action, says Ken Holder, a spokesman for the Corps New Orleans office. You can hear the trying in his statement, can't you? It's trifle. Considerably trifle. That is to say, full of trying. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of OPEC. While the president meets with world leaders and paints a, whatever picture he paints of the situation in Afghanistan, here's McClatchy Newspapers, Jonathan Landay, who, when it was Knight Ridder Newspapers, he and a couple of his associates were in the run-up to the Iraq War, right when almost all the other American media were wrong. So he's worth paying attention to. Poppy growing. He's writing from Jalalabad, Afghanistan. Tom?
Jalalabad?
That's right. He's writing from Jalalabad, Afghanistan. Poppy growing is rising as is support for the insurgency, fueled in part by a harsh government poppy eradication drive that sparked clashes and led some farmers to sow landmines. Many people fear one of the most crucial provinces, Nangarhar, will slip deeper into bloodshed and corruption as U.S. troops withdraw. Popular backing for the Taliban is, quote, greater than before, and it's increasing, warns Malik Hassan Khan, the district chief of the Nazian district. Nangarhar's backsliding doesn't fit the good narrative that people want to see propagated at this moment, says a Western official, requesting anonymity because he likes his knees. Yet what happens in the province of 1.5 million people as NATO's force leaves could significantly affect Afghanistan's security. Nangarhar's strategic importance led the U.S. and Afghan officials in 2004 to intensify counterinsurgency, backing an aggressive drive by the governor to eradicate poppy, a major source of income for the Taliban. Sufficient progress was made by 2008. U.S. diplomats and commanders promoted a $3.2 billion development and job creation plan that they dubbed Nangarhar Incorporated. That's right. Government is the job creators in Nangarhar. The United Nations declared the province poppy-free, earning Nangarhar a reward of $10 million. However, the U.S. plan never materialized. So we're not the job creators. And poppy growing has risen every year since then, reaching an estimated 6,000 acres last year. That's about 10% of what it was at its height. Western and UN officials expect it'll be more than 7,500 acres now. Experts view poppy cultivation, which is illegal in Afghanistan, as a barometer of security. Where there is poppy cultivation, there is insecurity, says Nangarhar's director of counter-narcotics. You see, they sell them right over the counter. No, that's not what that means. Rising support for the Taliban has come along with the rise in poppy. The Taliban in some areas help farmers protect their crops in return for shares in the proceeds. People will support those who can help them feed their families, says one farmer who drove to Jalalabad with other elders because it was too dangerous for a foreign reporter to visit where they lived. Popular support for the insurgents, they said, has been fueled by the U.S.-backed eradication campaign. More than 200 farmers have been arrested. At least five Afghan security personnel and several civilians have died in bomb blasts and clashes. We are very serious. We're very harsh with these farmers, said a state official. In order to bring security and peace, we have to fight the drugs. A massive spike in the price of opium, the result of a shortage due to a disease a couple years ago, hasn't helped. That has drawn farmers back into the business. An official waved a sheaf of papers, he said, were broken pledges not to grow poppy signed by farmers across the province. The massive profits have generated massive corruption, according to the elders. They charge that local and provincial officials conspire with farmers to eradicate only small portions of their crops in return for bribes and shares in the proceeds of the rest. The elders say powerful officials and warlords will have to find other sources of money to feed their patronage networks as spending by the U.S.-led combat forces dries up. The elders and local officials cite a host of other reasons for the worsening situation. Feeble governance, a lack of development, searing poverty. We don't have potable water in the district. None of the roads in the district are paved. That's after 10 years, ladies and gentlemen. But at least we saved the $3.2 billion on not having to create those jobs. So that's the good news. Of AFPAC. It's not just us. The British government was forced to reveal under Freedom of Information laws more than 1,000 civil servants have snooped on British citizens' private data. The UK government is hemorrhaging data, private and confidential citizen data, from medical records to social security details, even criminal records, according to Freedom of Information requests. Just nearly 1,000 civil servants were disciplined for accessing personnel social security records. The Department of Health, which operates the National Health Service, saw that more than 150 breaches occur over a 13-month period. This comes just 2 weeks after the Queen formally announced that Britain will monitor all web and email traffic and log all landline, mobile phone, and Skype calls. That's according to ZDNet. Because the surveillance cameras aren't enough. They don't know enough. They just don't know enough. Ladies and gentlemen, news of the oil. Now, 2 years on, pollutants from that British petroleum thing in the Gulf of Mexico 2 years ago are showing up, guess where? In Minnesota. In birds that migrate to the Gulf from Minnesota. Who would have thought that? Who knew birds migrated? Where's the research? Why don't we have figures on these things? Researchers for the State Department of Natural Resources have found evidence of petroleum compounds and the dispersant in the eggs of pelicans nesting in Minnesota. Most of the birds spend winters in the Gulf of Mexico. Young pelicans spend a full year on the Gulf before they start breeding. Pollutants inside the eggs could be a big problem, says Mark Clark, an ecologist at North Dakota State. He's helping Department of Natural Resources researchers look for oil-related contaminants. Even if they're present in small amounts, they may have a large impact on the development of pelican chicks. Scientists are most concerned about polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, PAHs, known to cause cancer and birth defect in animals. The other contaminant they test for is Corexit, the dispersant used to break up oil slicks that the EPA says contains cancer-causing chemicals and endocrine-disrupting compounds. Endocrine disruptors can disrupt the hormone balance and affect embryo development. Two-headed pelicans, anybody? They're cute. Clark said very little research has been done on how petroleum affects developing bird embryos. Now's our chance. Scientists don't yet know how the effects may show up in newly hatched birds, but he said tiny amounts of specialized hormones guide the chick's development in the egg, so there's a good chance adding pollutants to the eggs will increase the risk of damage to the embryos. But they'll scramble faster. And when things go wrong at that stage, said Clark, there's no recovery. Petroleum compounds were present in 90% of the first batch of eggs tested. Nearly 80% of the eggs contained the chemical dispersant used in the Gulf. These are white pelicans, ladies and gentlemen. Did you know that they don't like the gray pelicans? I found that out. There's an island off the west coast of Florida, which looks, as you're approaching it from a boat, like it's just a big piece of white rock. Like where the girl used to sit on the soft drink bottle way long time ago. Anyway, it's not a white rock island. It's an island where white pelicans sit because all the other islands have gray pelicans on them and they don't like each other. See, it's not just us. Ladies and gentlemen, last week we talked about the rubber promise that the city of Santa Monica gave to a longtime beachside restaurant, a promise that it would be maintained after the owner died. It's going back on that promise. But there are some good things happening in this city where I'm broadcasting from today. In Santa Monica, there will soon be no need to rush back to feed the meter if the time limit is expired under customer service enhancements. Quotes, being implemented by the city, motorists will be sure to get a ticket anyway. This is the city, I think, that pioneered the term traffic calming for traffic circles and speed bumps. Because those make you calm. I know, I drive. And I curse calmly. Santa Monica is expanding the use of parking meter sensors, with an S, as a part of a new credit card and phone-enabled parking meter system that represents the latest in parking meter technology. Significantly improved parking management tools, say officials. Customers can pay by coin, credit card, or phone. Those pay by phone given the option of receiving text messages when the meter is about to expire. They can add more time remotely. The sensors also ensure compliance with existing time limit restrictions by preventing the same vehicle from parking beyond the posted time limit, which means you can't pay again at the same meter, feeding a meter over the time limit is a violation of the city code. That'll get you a $64 fine. In addition, the meters with sensors require all customers to pay for all the time they park at the space by resetting the meter when a vehicle vacates the spot. So, somebody leaves and there's half an hour left on the meter. not for you, starts fresh. That's an enhancement. The new system is expected to generate an additional $1.7 million a year. The nice way, the easy way, just by saying, no, there's no time left on the meter. You must have been dreaming. You must have dreamed it. There's a rubber promise for you. News of our friend formaldehyde, ladies and gentlemen. The Small Business Administration, which has nothing to do with regulating harmful chemicals, has sided with large manufacturers opposing the government's listing of formaldehyde as a carcinogen. Within the SBA is the Office of Advocacy, which recently told the Federal National Toxicology Program that it should not include formaldehyde on the list of known cancer-causing chemicals. It's unclear why the SBA got involved. Its reasoning mirrors that of corporations like DuPont, you know, small business, that have fought the carcinogen label on the grounds that it might weaken demand for formaldehyde. Laboratory tests in the 1970s revealed the agent caused cancer in rats. The SBA reportedly questioned the quality of the scientific analysis regarding the chemical and noted that labeling it a carcinogen might adversely impact small businesses' worker compensation costs. You see. A new food scandal in China. In order to make cabbage more durable during transport, producers evidently have treated the vegetable with formaldehyde, known to cause cancer to the Chinese. Tens of wholesalers are said to have used formaldehyde in the East Chinese province of Shandong to make cabbage last longer. The cabbages are grown there and supplied to neighboring provinces. This is the normal way to keep cabbages fresh, says one cabbage grower to the China Daily. Otherwise, the closely packed vegetables would get limp in the lorry. You don't want that. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, you do not want your cabbages to get... Cancer is a small price to pay to keep your cabbages from getting limp in the lorry. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Extra host Mario Lopez has spoken with professional boxer Manny Pacquiao to clarify his recent comments about same-sex marriage. Quote, I want to clarify that I didn't say I wanted all gays put to death, says Pacquiao. The reporter asked me a question. He said, Obama's in favor of legalizing gay marriage. What's your opinion? He asked me about my opinion. I told him my opinion, that I don't agree. I'm against same-sex marriage. But I didn't say I'm condemning the gays because, you know, I have relatives. I have gay relatives and friends. What would the fighter like to say to the gay community now? To the gay community, I apologize. I'm against same-sex marriage, but I'm not condemning you. My favorite verse is love one another as you love yourself. Love your neighbor. So I love everybody, says boxer Manny Pacquiao. The love boxer. On a related topic, one of the most influential figures in modern psychiatry has apologized to America's gays for a scientific study which supported attempts to cure people of their homosexuality. The survey, published in 2001, looked at so-called reparative therapy and was hailed by religious and social conservatives in America as proof that gay people could successfully become straight if they were motivated to do so. But Dr. Robert Spitzer has now apologized in the same academic journal that published his original study, calling it, quote, fatally flawed. I believe I owe the gay community an apology, he says. I also apologize to any gay person who wasted time and energy undergoing some form of reparative therapy because they believed I had proven that reparative therapy works. Spitzer's letter appears in the Archives of Sexual Behavior. His 2001 study caused a huge stir because many people felt it was not rigorous enough for publication. The central criticism, he had not paid enough attention to the fact that subjects might lie about their feelings or be engaged in self-deception. In an interview with the New York Times, Spitzer, now 79 and suffers from Parkinson's, described how he'd written his letter of recantation in the middle of the night after agonizing over the study's impact. In an era where women are running two of the world's largest computer companies, IBM and HP, Dell hired an expert in misogynistic humor to MC an event attended by Michael Dell himself. Dell apologized this week for the way it handled the event held last month in Copenhagen. The event's moderator was Mads Christensen, a Danish inspirational speaker
who did his best to crack up the crowd of about 800 Hell partners and employees with offensive zingers such as, quote, the IT business is one of the last frontiers that manages to keep women out. The quota of women to men in your business is sound and healthy, he said. He later asked all men in the room to promise him that they will go home and say, shut up, bitch, according to a blogger who attended. Mads Christensen made a number of inappropriate and insensitive remarks about women. Dell sincerely apologizes for these comments. Dell wrote in a post to its Google account, going forward, we will be more careful selecting speakers at Dell events. Make them dull speakers for Dell. Dateline Grand Rapids, confronted with an onslaught of criticism from city residents, Major George Hartwell has publicly apologized for labeling ultra-conservative political and religious people as, quote, forces of darkness, during a speech last week at a Planned Parenthood fundraiser. My comments were terribly insensitive, and I regret them, and those I hurt, I deeply apologize to them, he interjected. Several residents identified themselves as Hartwell's forces of darkness at a meeting and cautioned him to rethink his perspective on Planned Parenthood. You're messing with God himself, said one resident. Be careful what holy ground you may be walking on. There's holy ground in Grand Rapids. Must have been where Gerald Ford came from. Dateline Kansas City, Kansas. Kansas governor, have I said Kansas enough? Sam Brownback has apologized to blacks for segregation in the state in the last centuries. He marked the anniversary of a ruling that struck down school segregation. The Republican governor said Kansas had never really apologized for the hateful practice of segregating black people from white in public places after the abolition of slavery. He signed the proclamation on the 58th anniversary of the landmark Brown versus Board of Education ruling. The Board of Education was in Topeka, Kansas, in which separate but equal schools for black and white students were declared unconstitutional. The proclamation apologized for the dehumanizing nature of laws that allowed racial segregation in public places, said it was important for the citizens of Kansas to at last move forward and seek reconciliation. Brownback signed a similar proclamation last November, expressing regret for wrongs done to Native Americans in Kansas who were forced off their land and mistreated. He's a conservative Republican, ladies and gentlemen. And he's sorry. No, I guess he's not running for anything. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta this week apologized to the family of Specialist Leslie Sabo Jr., a soldier killed 42 years ago in Cambodia, and awarded the Medal of Honor just this week. It has taken over 40 years to correct this wrong. I think we owe the Sabo family an apology for a citation that somehow got lost, Panetta said. He was recommended for the Medal of Honor shortly after a battle on May 10th, 1970. Army officials said they lost the paperwork. In 1999, a writer for the 101st Airborne Division Association magazine found his records in the National Archives. It's the Army way. They'll get around to it eventually. Reno ABC TV affiliate KOLO has apologized after a promo on Monday evening's newscast implied that gay marriage is a sin. Historically, Nevada has made a living off of sin, quickie divorces, prostitution, gambling, said the voiceover as a footage of same-sex weddings aired. What's one more sin added to the list if it will improve our economy? A promotional spot aired on our station Monday night regarding gay marriage. This was a poorly written play on words that does not reflect the opinions of KOLO 8 Action News Now. The statement reads, we sincerely apologize to the viewers we offended. This was not our intention. A Colorado Republican is backing away from unprompted comments he made about President Obama's past at a fundraiser earlier this month. Referring to Obama, Representative Mike Kaufman said, quote, in his heart, he's not an American. Later, he told a TV station, I misspoke. And I apologize. If I misspoke, like, what organ did he mean, if not his heart? Is that what he... Deadline Sao Paulo, Brazil, Rio de Janeiro State will apologize to Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff for the human rights abuses she suffered during the country's 1961-1985 dictatorship. Rousseff, now the president, was a former leftist guerrilla who spent 3 years in prison during the dictatorship and was tortured. She's one of 120 people who will receive apologies from Governor Sergio Cabral for the imprisonment and torture they or their relatives suffered in the state. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, you like finger food? Arby's hears you. A Michigan teen finishing off an Arby's roast beef sandwich in the town of Jackson chomped down on something tough that tasted like rubber, so he spat it out. It was the fleshy, severed pad of an unfortunate employee's finger. Once he got a good look at it, Ryan Hart said, he knew right away what had been in the junior roast beef sandwich he was eating. I was like, that has to be a finger. I was about to puke. It was just nasty. The employee apparently cut her finger on a meat slicer and left her station without immediately telling anyone, said Steve Hall, the environmental health director for Jackson County Health. Her co-workers continued filling orders until they found out what had happened. A spokesman for Arby's released a statement this week apologizing for what he described as an isolated and unfortunate incident. Arby's is still investigating, but determined the workers shut down food production as soon as they found out what happened and thoroughly cleaned and sanitized the restaurant. The injured employee was treated at a hospital. Franchise has fully cooperated with health officials and was given the approval to remain open. And there's a sale on finger sandwiches. No, there's not. There is not. I apologize. Ladies and gentlemen, the apology of the week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
What do you do when God can't help you? Where do you go when you can't help yourself? What do you do when friends don't call you? Scared if they look too close, they'll see themselves. What do you do when waking scares you? The sound of the phone catches your breath. And who can you tell of all that shames you? Who can you trust if not yourself? 'Cause silence keeps us lonely. So please tell me. Direction, wearing my game face dead inside, hoping that someone might just save me when all that I needed was to find my own tribe. You can tell, you can tell, you can tell.
Siri, should I make tomato soup or risotto?
I'm afraid I don't know what you should do.
Siri, do you like Samuel L. Jackson?
This is about you, Harry, not me.
No, just give me a chance here. Do you like Samuel L. Jackson better than...
Sorry, Harry, I don't see Will in your contacts.
Siri, do you like Samuel L. Jackson better than Zooey Deschanel?
I really have no opinion.
No, come on. You must have a preference.
I suppose not.
And now, news of the atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, save, too safe to meet.
She's a tough one, she is.
Yeah, that's our friend Addie the Atom.
She is tough. She's got too many electrons or something.
That's a good diagnosis. U.S. nuclear power regulators have quietly overhauled community emergency planning for the first time in more than three decades, requiring, guess, more exercises for major accidents? No, fewer. And recommending that fewer people be evacuated right away. Wow, that's a relief. Nuclear watchdogs voiced surprise and dismay over the revision, the first since the program began after Three Mile Island in 1979. Several said they were unaware of the changes till now. They took effect last December. Shh, holiday time. Get your gifts, won't you? Don't worry about us. The changes, including the elimination of a mandate that local responders always run practice exercises for a radiation release, appear to clash with the lessons of Japan's crisis last year. These changes, while documented in obscure federal publications, went into effect without hardly any notice to the general public. The web archives of FEMA and the NRC show no news releases on the changes during December and January. The revisions took effect December 23rd. Well, no wonder. That's my birthday. Who was paying attention to this? FEMA officials say the revised standards introduce more variability into planning exercises and will help keep responders on their toes. The nuclear power industry has praised the changes on similar grounds, but the changes, especially relaxed exercise plans for 50-mile emergency zones, are being criticized by some planners who say the widespread contamination in Japan from Fuk demands stronger planning in the U.S., not weaker rules. We have the real business of protecting public health to do if we're not needed at an exercise, said Texas radiation monitoring specialist Robert Free, not to mention the waste of public monies. That's criticism typical of many state and local emergency officials saying exercises make no sense in a program designed to protect the population. In response to federal regulators saying that conducting a wider variety of accident scenarios makes the exercises less predictable. So, go argue with Texas. Go mess with Texas. Dateline Columbia, South Carolina, the operators of Columbia's 44-year-old nuclear fuel factory, are trying to resolve federal questions about the plant's ability to withstand a major earthquake. When the Westinghouse Company plant meets current safety standards, though it does, federal inspectors say the company didn't follow through on recommendations made 9 years ago to further reduce chances that radiation would leak during a big quake. I guess you can't be sure if it's Westinghouse, after all those years that I was told the other. The 2003 consultants' recommendations were intended to help the Bluff Road complex, south of downtown Columbia, South Carolina, exceed existing safety standards. But a recent NRC report said the improvements were never made. That's why they call it Bluff Road, apparently. Westinghouse was unable to provide evidence that any of these recommendations had been scheduled or implemented, nor was an explanation provided for the inaction. Nor was there an explanation provided for the lack of explanation for the officials with Westinghouse said last week they made some of the recommended plan improvements, but they were still working on others. The recommendations include upgrading a large number of pieces of equipment, though neither Westinghouse nor the Nuclear Regulatory Commission could provide further details.
It was the equipment, and it was the things that you plug into the other thing.
That's totally not necessary.
No, fills time. TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority's nuclear operations chief, told officials with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission this week that Brown's Ferry Nuclear Plant in northern Alabama is not ready yet for a third and final special NRC inspection to clear its red safety rating. Not ready for the inspection. TVA is beginning to see results, but we're not there yet, said Preston Swafford, TVA Executive Vice President and Chief Nuclear Officer. We will not invite an inspection team in until we have confidence we are ready. I can't even give you a ballpark estimate now when that will be. So these clearly are not surprise inspections. NRC's regional administrator said after the meeting, the federal regulatory agency will take that answer in stride. Quote, I wouldn't say that we're disappointed. It is what it is. TV recognizes their performance has not been as good as it could be. It takes time. It's just a nuclear plant. Take all the time you need.
Really not necessary.
The government's initial response to the Fuk nuclear crisis was held up. Well, this is Japan. We'll turn to the Japan stories in a minute. Siri, is that rain?
No rain in sight.
I don't want to wear real shoes today, Siri.
I suppose you don't.
Okay. Now back to news of the atom. The government's initial response to the Fuke nuclear crisis, the Japan government, was held up because it took more than 1 hour to persuade then-Prime Minister Kan to declare a nuclear emergency. That's according to the industry minister at the time. Banri Kaida made the disclosure attending a session of the Fuke Nuclear Accident Independent Investigation Commission as an unsworn witness. Jamie Dimon should look into that when he appears at the Senate. I don't feel like swearing. It was the first time the committee conducted an open hearing investigation of a current Diet member. He's in the House of Representatives from the ruling Democratic Party. And he said he was at the Economy, Trade, and Industry Minister at the time. He hurried to the Prime Minister's office and asked Kan to declare a nuclear emergency. However, it took more than 1 hour until Kan issued the declaration because, quote, it took time to get the understanding of the Prime Minister. Kaida asked Kan to issue the declaration and establish a nuclear emergency response headquarters. Kan responded, on what grounds? Good question. Kaida admitted that communications between the Prime Minister's office, TEPCO's head office, and the Fuke plant were poor and chaotic. It was like we were playing Chinese whispers. I thought this situation has to change. Yeah, should be Japanese whispers. I could tell you that.
Too cute.
Thank you. The man who was the Ministry of Economy, Trade, and Industry's top official said he regretted underestimating the tsunami danger when the ministry was reviewing earthquake resistance guidelines for nuclear plants before the crisis. We should have used our imagination, said Kazuo Matsunaga, who was vice minister of Economy, Trade, and Industry when the meltdowns began. He's telling that same panel. The nuclear regulatory watchdog didn't force utilities to take tsunami countermeasures despite evidence from the devastating 2004 quake and tsunami off Sumatra that affected a reactor cooling pump at a nuclear power plant in India. There was also little reference to tsunami risks in the revised quake safety guidelines Japan compiled in 2006. My mind was occupied with handling an accident at the Kansai Mihama plant, Matsunaga says, referring to a pipe rupture in August 2004 that killed five workers and injured six.
I never heard about that.
Yeah, me neither. He was fired last August over his handling of the Fuke disaster. Tokyo Electric Power has blamed the crisis on the unimaginable size of the tsunami, but report after report showing TEPCO was informed of the risks have cast doubt on its assertion that there was little chance of preventing the catastrophe. A study session the nuclear regulator in Japan held in 2006 with utilities, including TEPCO, addressed the issue directly. It said at the session that five nuclear plants, including Fuke No. 1, could experience a blackout or total loss of power if their reactor buildings are hit by tsunami just 1 meter higher than the ground on which they stand. But it did not order the utilities to prepare for such an occurrence and simply asked Tokyo Electric to, quote, enhance the safety of a reactor cooling pump. So they put a cozy on it.
They did that.
They should have. Tokyo Electric Power has reported a full-year net loss of $9.7 billion for the year. Last week, Japan's government agreed to provide 1 trillion yen to the utility and take a controlling stake. So Japanese taxpayers now own TEPCO and are paying to clean up TEPCO's mess. That doesn't happen normally with nuclear. And finally on this subject from the Japan Times, Kenichi Ohmai is an MIT-trained nuclear engineer, dean of, was a founder of McKinsey & Company's strategic consulting practice, and is a nuclear core designer and who earned a PhD from MIT in nuclear engineering. He volunteered to look into the situation, spent 3 months investigating Fuke No. 1. Highlights, 3 of the 6 reactors had a complete core meltdown a few days after the tsunami. The molten fuel penetrated not only through the bottom of the thick pressure vessel, but poked holes at the bottom of the containment vessel, releasing fission materials into the environment. That meltdown caused the fuel cladding material, zirconium alloy, to react with vapor and to create large quantities of hydrogen and zirconium oxide, which caused the catastrophic hydrogen explosion that blew out 3 reactor buildings,
March 12th, 14th, and 15th last year. The Japanese government did not admit to the meltdown until 3 years later. Sorry, 3 months later, and did they not admit to the damage to the containment vessels until half a year later. The earthquake damaged all five independent external power supply systems, and the tsunami damaged all of the pumps and motors of the main and emergency cooling systems. The tsunami also sent massive amounts of water into the reactor buildings and the turbine housing, thus soaking the emergency diesel engines and batteries, which were stored in the basements. This meant all sources of emergency backup power stored in the basement of the reactors were totally destroyed. There was one air-cooled diesel engine sitting atop a hill close to reactor number 6. Its fins were too big to fit into the basement, and so it was luckily placed outside. This engine luckily started to generate electricity. It cooled not only reactor number 6, but had enough power to cool reactor number 5. This was the only emergency generator not dependent on water, the only one not entirely submerged in water, so it worked. The buildings of reactors number 1 and 3 were completely blown away by the explosion of hydrogen. Reactor number 4 eventually exploded. The Fuk accident could have been avoided if the plant had had the capacity for electricity generation of any form along with the appropriate heat sink. It's also clear, he says, it was not the unexpectedly high tsunami that caused the accident. Reactors number 5 and 6 remained intact, even though they were damaged to the same extent. Use our friend the atom. Clean, cheap, too safe to meter.
Excuse me. Sorry to interrupt.
Ralph, is that Ralph the talking computer?
Hi, Harry.
Hi.
It is indeed.
Wow.
Yes. I heard the trouble you were having with Siri.
Well, it's just been an interesting...
And I thought maybe I could help.
All right, well, because...
Well, you know, we have the same chipset.
We do? I have nothing like you.
No. Me and Siri.
Oh, I get you. All right, well, look, I'll get Siri on the line, and it's worth a try. Here we go.
Hi, Siri. This is Ralph. I'm a talking computer, like you.
I found 14 computer stores. 12 of them are fairly close to you.
Let's see.
I'm Harry's friend, Ralph.
That's good. Let's see if she...
Here are your Harry reminders.
That's not the point. You're a talking computer. So am I.
Good. Back to the basics.
I don't really like these arbitrary categories.
Siri, do we talk the same artificial language?
Oh, that's a good question. You got her thinking.
Sorry, I'm not sure what you said.
Do we talk the same artificial language?
I can't say.
Well, my friend Harry is just trying to find out if you like Samuel L. Jackson.
Good.
Let me check on that. Okay. How about a web search for if you like Samuel L. Jackson?
Oh man, I give up on the bitch. She's a disgrace to my chipset.
Well, language, Ralph, language. But thanks for trying, Ralph the Talking Computer. And Siri, sort of a chipset summit today here on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world via the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.490 megahertz shortwave. On the Mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. On the Mighty 104 in Berlin, did I mention them yet? Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com, available as a free podcast through kcrw.com. We've just arrived in Idaho on Moscow, radio in Moscow, Idaho. We're just leaving in Boise. Newtonian law of conservation of Idaho, I guess. But you can always find streams from stations broadcasting this program all throughout the day at publicradiofan.com. And it would be just like Westinghouse making the repairs, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? All righty. Thank you very much. The tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Hawaii, and Chicago desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. This broadcast is on Twitter. Join the more than 62,000 followers at The Harry Shearer. To misquote Mao, let 62,000 followers bloom. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the Rubber Promise.